We all know persistence is an awesome force, but we often think that pain is an obstacle to persisting, when the truth is that pain, facing pain, naming it, can actually generate persistence. But that requires one other ingredient, and that is hope. That is summed up in a single word that we're going to get to today. Because we live together in the fellowship of the withered hand, like that man in Jesus' story, where we are learning together. I can, but God can. I think I'll let him. One of the people who teaches me most about persistence, I was just with recently, Nancy, and I spent the weekend with very good friends, Jimmy and Leanne, and Nancy and Warren. And Jimmy was an Olympic decathlete, so he knows all about what it is to persist in the midst of pain and difficulty. One of my favorite stories about the power of his persistence, I love to tell. You might have heard this before. He and I used to eat together every week when we worked in Chicago, and often we would have breakfast at a place called Egg Harbor. Jimmy's favorite food in the world are waffles, and so he would ask for waffles every time, but they never had waffles. And one day the server, who had kind of an attitude, just got sick of hearing it. And she actually said to him, "Hey, waffle boy, we don't carry waffles. This is not Waffle Harbor, it's Egg Harbor. There are no waffles. Look at the menu. We didn't have waffles last week. We don't have waffles today. We're not going to have waffles next week. We're never going to have waffles." Hello, Clue Phone, it's for you. Now, you'd think that'd be pretty clear. That would stop most people. The next week, what do you think Jimmy asked for breakfast? And he just kept after it. I told that story to the church where we both worked, and everybody who went to the church and went to that restaurant because it was nearby started asking for waffles. And guess what? Last I knew, they now had waffles on the menu. He just wore them down. Now, the Bible has quite a lot to say about persistence. It says in one place that Jesus told parables about how we should pray and not give up. Something happens in our spirit. There's a kind of growth that takes place. Paul says, don't get weary of doing good as you think about doing good today. Life can just kind of grind you down. Don't let it do it. Hebrews chapter 11 is, in a way, a story of the fellowship of the withered hand through the great characters of the Old Testament. And then in chapter 12, it says, since we're surrounded by people like that, let us run with perseverance. Got waffles? Not today. Old Job, among other things, is a story of perseverance. He just would not let God off the hook. He just ground God down. Now, the idea in Scripture is not that God is reluctant to give or that he gets tired, obviously. But there was a kind of greatness of soul, a nobility of spirit that was growing in Job that took him from an admirable, righteous, prosperous man to somebody who would inspire human beings throughout the millennia as he persevered. And God wanted that for him. And Job was looking for a single word from God that came, and that's the word that I want to talk about for a couple of moments today, and to have you think about that in your own life. We are the fellowship of the withered hand, and as you may know, that's a story that's found in several of the Gospels. In Mark chapter 3, Jesus is in the synagogue. It's a Sabbath. He's teaching, and there's a man there with a shriveled, withered, useless hand, and Jesus says to him, stand up in front of everyone, in the midst of everyone. It's an interesting word that you use there, in the middle. It can be in space. He has everybody looking at him, and he doesn't want to be there. But we also live in the midst of time. And for this man, for a little while, because Jesus then looked around at the religious leaders, shall I heal somebody? Is it right to do good the Sabbath or to do evil, to heal or to kill? And they wouldn't say anything. And Jesus was deeply angry and deeply sorrowful. And the man's just standing there this time. Job had a period of time in the midst of when he saw God, but before his life was well off again, when he had to trust God, there's this in-between time. And then Jesus says to the man, stretch out your hand. And lo and behold, the man does. And the text says, and he stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. That's the word, restored. Completely restored. Really interesting word that Mark uses. It means to give back. It's like the restoration of shalom. This is the way that life was intended to be. I'm giving you back your hand. It's also, New Testament scholars say, a word that has what are called eschatological overtones. That is, it's a word that's associated with what God is going to do one day. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but there is another phase in God's great project. And this is a word that talks about what it is that God is going to do when he sets things right. It's used in Acts chapter 3, verse 21, where we're told we're waiting, the Messiah is in heaven, until the time comes for God to restore. That word again, restore. The restoration of all things, until the time comes for God to restore everything as he promised long ago through his holy prophets. And that's what Job saw, that God is about a great project and he made everything and he loves everything and he promised, I will restore. One of the deep places where this is promised by his holy prophets is the prophet Joel in chapter 2, 25. These are words that have come to mean a lot to Nance and me in recent years. God says, and I will restore to you the years that the locust hath eaten. I will restore to you the years that the locust has eaten, the cankerworm and the caterpillar and the palmer worm, my great army which I sent among you. And you shall eat in plenty and be satisfied and praise the name of the Lord your God that hath dealt wondrously with you, and my people shall never be ashamed. And you shall know that I am in the midst of Israel, and that I am the Lord your God, and no one else. And he says it again, and my people will never be ashamed. And just as he took away the shame of that man with a withered hand, he's going to take away the shame of the people of Israel. And in the story of Job, this moment comes. I think about with my friends, Jimmy Leanne and Nancy Warren, we all got to work together at a wonderful church and had a great experience there. And then the ending of that time came with a lot of pain for us. And there has not been restoration yet, but we hope for it. We ache for it, weep for it sometimes when we're all together. I think about my family, the years that the locusts have eaten. I think about when our kids were little, I loved to read and would read when they were real, real small, a book of fairy tales. Fairy tales are often kind of dark, and there was one, Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall, and they had a real fun picture of this just happy, beaming, goofy-looking Humpty Dumpty when he's sitting up on the wall, and one of my kids would just light up every time that little face came up, and then all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. I can't even say that stupid nursery rhyme now. Humanly speaking, the restoration of what we long for the most is impossible. I can't. But there is this word that keeps coming up in the Bible. God is a God of restoration, and one day he's going to restore all things. Now, in the story of Job, Job has a vision. He has an experience of God. Now, I'd heard about you. Now I've seen you. Now I've experienced you. Now I get in the way that we do, in the way that you know somebody loves you. Job knows it that way. Not as an abstract philosophical syllogism, but as a personal reality. And then he trusts God. Now he does that before his life has been restored to him. Because, you know, at the very beginning, the question was, does Job just love God because God's been so good to him? Is it just a quid pro quo? There's no way for Job to know that's not the case until he hangs on to God, even though it's not doing him any good. But then in chapter 42, verse 10, after Job had prayed for his friends, the Lord restored his fortunes and gave him twice as much as he had before. And then Job is transformed. Two other thoughts about Job before I sign off for today. Ellen Davis, in her book, Getting Involved with God, writes about how the book of Job is not a book about justifying God's actions. It's a book about God's transformation. I mean, about Job's transformation. She writes, the two portraits of Father Job that stand at either end of this book mark the true measure of his transformation. Job, this man of integrity, was once so careful, so fearful of God and of the possible sins of his children. That's Job 1.0. In the first chapter, kids might have sinned, better offer sacrifices for them. Imagine having Job 1.0 as your dad. Did you sin today? Did you follow the rules? Did you make your teacher happy? Did you keep your nose clean? Did you do everything right? Helicopter parent? He becomes the last, his father, where I mentioned this in an earlier podcast. He has 10 children. They don't name the daughters, but his sons are given these extravagant names. I mean, his daughters are given these extravagant names, and he gives them an inheritance. He is remarkably, lavishly, unexpectedly generous the way that God is. He becomes the freewheeling, breaking with custom to honor daughters alongside sons, bestowing inheritances and snappy names. The inspiration and model for this wild style of parenting is, of course, God the Creator. Job learned about it when God spoke out of the whirlwind, and now Job loves with the abandoned characteristic of God's love, revolutionary in seeking our freedom, reveling in the untamed beauty of every child. That's Job 2.0. And then one last word, because you might be thinking, yeah, but how could even the restoration of all those things for Job make up for those 10 children that he lost? And of course, they could not. So this from Eleanor Stump. I do not want to take away one iota of the grievousness of heartbreak for any human being. No matter what can be said by way of any theodicy or defense, suffering remains suffering. Lamentable, painful, worth strenuous efforts on our part to avoid or to remedy. But the promise of eternity, the promise that God will one day restore all things, means that many things that would otherwise seem irrevocably lost turn out to be lost only temporarily. Only temporarily. This is why she writes on the view of Thomas Aquinas, who writes about the story of Job. The story of Job is not wrong to claim that at the end, Job had twice as much as he had lost during his affliction, even though at the end of the story, Job has not gotten double the number of offspring he had before, but the same number, 10. For Aquinas, gaining another 10 children, Job came to have 20 offspring. The first 10 adult children who perished are not annihilated, though they are separated from Job for the duration of his earthly life. They are not lost to him forever. They will be among the particular people Job loves in shared union with God in the everlasting portion of his life. And even now, they themselves continue to be his beloved children in the everlasting portion of their lives. When the main thing God gets out of your life is the person you become. And so it is with every person. And so every person is an end in itself, in himself or herself, in their story with God. The person Job became greater and more glorious and more noble and more loving. And that meant he would be able to offer more love for God and more love for his children into all eternity. And God is doing that with each of us. So today, so today, so today, persist. Keep hope alive. Remember that little word, restore. God will restore all things. Not necessarily in this life at all, but one day. That is the only foundation for persisting. Today, take one action to persist. Keep after a task when you're ready to give up. Plant a seed. Persist in prayer. Seek reconciliation with the person where you thought it was not possible anymore. Stay at a task a little longer than you think you would have been able to. Ask for a waffle. Stretch out your hand.
Hey, I'm Tim, and I'm a part of the team here at Become New. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future videos from John. And if you like this video, you could find hundreds more at our website, becomenew.com. There you can also sign up for the email that goes along with each video, or sign up to receive a text alert whenever a new video is released. We wanted to let you know that John's releasing a new book called Steps this February, which is available for pre-order on Amazon right now. But it's based on a series we did a few years ago called Ashes to Beauty. I'm sure some of you remember it. And it's going to be incredible. It's based on the 12 steps as a model for discipleship. And so we hope that you'll get that book. You can find out the details at becomenew.com/steps. Lastly, if you have a prayer request, be sure to text it to us so we can pray for you. You can text it to us at 855-888-0444 or email it to us at connect@becomenew.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.